Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad that you are joining us. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, you can do that as well. Those phone numbers, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or send us an email during the live broadcast. That address is jx@jeffnet.org. Maybe a few people gather around when you tell stories of the Christmases of your youth. If you were lucky enough to spend your youth in Ireland, you might be able to pack a theater full of people to listen to those stories. And it helps to have some songs and dances, too. That is the magic of the traveling show A Celtic Christmas, born in the Rogue Valley, but traveling the country for years now. I should say, ancestored in Ireland and born in the Rogue Valley. The program features songs and stories and dances and more. With Tamashine Foley and company, we have Tamashine Foley right here in the studio with us. He's the creator of the show and the narrator. Tom, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff. Lovely to be back.
Good to have you all here. And then we'll go around the room and introduce the other people you'll be hearing from later on. Alice Ryan is a singer with the group.
Hi, thanks.
Good to have you here. Patrick Darcy plays pipes and whistle. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Good. And William Coulter is back with us after a year's absence. He plays the guitar and is the musical director of A Celtic Christmas. William, good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
So, Tom, let's start with you. Tell us about yourself, just the thumbnail sketch of Tumbalong Blantan and your Irish roots and how you ended up in America.
Sorry, Jeff, I can't do a thumbnail sketch.
Do you need bigger canvas?
Right.
Well, I grew up in a remote parish in the west of Ireland called Tumbalong Blantan. And I grew up at a time when in our area there was no electricity, no one had a motor car, no telephones, anything like that. And so people would gather at their houses at Christmas time, and they would bring their musical instruments, and they would have a night of singing, dancing, playing, and storytelling. And this show is an attempt to recreate the atmosphere of that night, because it's easy enough to recreate the music and the dance and the storytelling, but it's the atmosphere of actually being there that we are after.
And how was the show born? Somebody suggested it to you, didn't they?
Well, what happened was I used to tell these stories to my wife and she was always saying, you know, people would love to hear these. And I thought, no, you know, it's too archaic. You know, Americans are used to seeing $100 million movies and whatever. They wouldn't be interested in these stories. But one night here in Ashland, she signed me up in an open mic at the library. And I went along and I told a story. And there happened to be someone from who had a radio program in NPR at the time at the library that night. And she was interested, and that was Tish Steinfeld, who is here in, now known as Tish McFadden. And so Tish got very interested in what I was doing, and the show kind of took off from there.
And how far and wide has it traveled? Have you gone all across the country with the Celtic Christmas?
Oh, every year, yeah. We just come back from, we were in Connecticut, Boston, Pennsylvania, and on tomorrow night we're in Reading at the Cascade, and on Sunday we have two shows at the Criterion in Medford.
All right, so a very, very busy schedule. Let's meet some of the other cast members here. Alice Ryan, come up to the microphone and tell us a bit about yourself and where you're from.
I live in Fresno, California, but my dad is from Dublin, Ireland. My mom's American. And I've always been into Irish music. My parents listen to a lot of different music at home, and my brother plays fiddle. And I started Irish dancing.
Your mother's an opera singer, right?
Yes, my mother was an opera singer. We used to live in Europe when I was little. And I started Irish step dancing when I was about 10. And I've been into Irish music and Irish dancing ever since.
So you do sing and dance?
Yes.
Both those things are. Okay, got it. And let's bring William Coulter up to the microphone.
Yes,
and tell
sir.
Us a bit about yourself. You're a Grammy winner, I understand, from years past.
This is true. Yeah, it was a few years ago, but that did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It was a Henry Mancini tribute album, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell us about yourself. And first of all, the other faces seem to change year by year, mm-hmm. but you're a perennial.
Yeah, Tom just won't let me escape. I try every year, but it doesn't work.
No, actually, I've been trying to get rid of him for years. It doesn't go.
Oh, it's been great. You know, we've been doing the show for like 15 years now, and it's become a family, an annual family visit. It's really been nice.
And let's meet Pat Darcy. Scooch up to the microphone a bit, yes. And tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I am from Dublin originally, in the south part of the county, almost the Wicklow Mountains. And I've been in Los Angeles, living in Los Angeles for 20 years now. And I play the Illan pipes, the Irish pipes, and whistles, low whistles, high whistles, and a bit of bowron as well, which is the Irish drum. And yeah, so I've been playing in various groups and things. So I'm the new boy in the band this year. So
all the rookie hazing things.
Yeah.
Right. Tell us about the Illan pipes, because for the folks who obviously can't see, since we are a radio program, mm-hmm. It's not like the bagpipe. There's nothing you blow into. It's all operated by what?
By my elbows, unfortunately. So there's a bellows under my right elbow, which pumps through to the bag under my left elbow. And then there's 7 reeds in them all together. 3 of them operate the drones that sound like this. And 3 of them operate the regulators, which don't regulate anything whatsoever. But they,
but they're Irish regulators.
They're Irish regulators, yeah.
But they play chords that I play with my right wrist. That kind of thing. And then the chanter, which I hold in both my hands, and I play the melody on that.
So it's not so much picking up this instrument as putting it on. It really is like a suit of clothing.
Yeah,
it?
And it's the only instrument that comes with a safety belt and an airbag. Just get that out of the way.
Jesus, you have to. Really, Patrick?
Yes, I went there. Right. That just happened.
It's too early in the morning for that.
So, Tom, quickly, before we get to a break, how did you assemble all the people? How do you find them every year?
Well, you know, actually, the world of Irish music is surprisingly small and intimate. So people, almost everybody knows almost everybody in this little world. And I met Patrick, for example. We both were doing a different show in Los Angeles called An Irish Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that's where I first met him.
Okay, and we'll get the stories on the rest of them when we come back from a break. We have to take one now. We're talking to the cast and crew, well, a portion of the cast of A Celtic Christmas with Tamashine Foley, Alice Ryan, Pat Darcy, and William Coulter. We'll come back on the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with them in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to a portion of the cast of A Celtic Christmas, which is the representation of songs and stories and dances of a traditional Irish Christmas, as assembled by Tamashine Foley of Ashland and his talented cast from various parts of the country. We have with us not just Tom Foley, but also his music director and guitar player, William Coulter, Patrick Darcy on pipes and whistle, and Alice Ryan, a singer, here in the studio with us. So, Tom, getting back to the formation of the show, you mentioned that Irish music is actually a fairly small community, and you were just talking about how you and Pat Darcy hooked up.
Yeah, so we were both in another show that used to play in Los Angeles called An Irish Christmas, and I was working on that show, and so was he, and so that's how I met him. And he told me about this great singer in L.A. called Alice Ryan. And that's kind of how it goes, you know. And we also have a new accordion player this year who isn't here with us this morning, called Samantha Harvey, and also a dancer.
All right. So there's a fair amount of churn each year. Do you lose a couple of people out of the cast each year and have to pick up new ones?
Yeah, I mean, we have a basic core of people, and then we have people, you know, to keep it fresh and new and different. And each new person brings something new to the show every year. Yeah,
are the crowds about what they had been? It seems like this real interest in all things Celtic kind of peaked a few years ago, and I don't know if we're on the backslide or what now. But it sounds like you're still doing a bang up job on the road here with the show.
We are. I mean, we noticed a fall off during the, because we play mostly colleges, mm-hmm. and colleges have their funding cut dramatically, and the first thing they do, of course, is cut groups like us coming in. But aside from that, it's been great. And the Criterion, this will be our 17th year, I think, at the Criterion. And I think it would also be about the same amount of time we've been going to Reading. and so they seem to be doing fine.
All right, excellent. So, so with all the instruments sitting here and the music sitting, it's a kinetic energy. You know, we have to, or potential energy, right?
Right.
When it gets spent, then it's kinetic energy. So, why don't we have a song? And if you tell me first whether we need vocals or not, here we'll figure out how to assign
first.
Microphones.
Maybe some tunes. First.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a couple of reels.
Okay. This will be William Coulter on guitar and Pat Darcy on pipes and whistle from A Celtic Christmas here on the Jefferson Exchange. William Coulter and Pat Darcy here playing on the Jefferson Exchange from A Celtic Christmas. What's that called, either one of you guys?
Come West Along the Road.
Come West Along the Road is the first one. The second one's called The New Mown Meadow.
And the remarkable range of sounds you can get out of the Ellen pipes, Pat.
Yeah, there's two full octaves, and then so it's the mixolydian mode. So you have a flattened third and a flattened seventh, and which you can intersperse there. So you can get bluesy kind of tones as well, which is integral to Irish music as well, you know. It's that melancholic sound,
I suppose. Because between the chanter and the chords and the drones, you had all kinds of stuff going on. It sounded like several instruments at once.
It's an orchestra.
Yeah, they were designed to be a one-man band originally. Because back in the pre-famine era in Ireland, you know, before the 1840s, that type of time, there was, you know, the manor houses, and the gentry would have had resident pipers in the houses, the big, you know, manor houses. And so the lord of the manor would endow a set of pipes to a local piper, and they would entertain the guests and that type of thing. And occasionally the lord of the manor himself would play the pipes himself. And, you know, there was one man, what was his name? Lord Rossmore, who was a very famous lord of the manor and also a great piper. And he was known to have tricked the occasional piper by playing himself, you know, playing the pipes. And because a lot of the pipers back then were blind, so they couldn't see who was playing. And this one particular piper, I think it may have been Garrett Barry, but I'm not 100% sure. He felt he had been tricked. He'd been duped into, you know, being shown up by a better piper. You know, it was like it was a competition set up. But it turned out to be Lord Rossmore playing the pipes. So there you go.
How long does it take to learn how to play the Eilean pipes? And do you play bagpipes as well?
I don't play bagpipes.
Is that for sissies actually blowing into things?
Yeah. Well, you know, they say that the Eilean pipes are designed so you can drink and play at the same time. But
who says that?
Scottish people. But No, but the Scottish pipes and the Irish pipes are very different. You know, the Uilleann pipes are very different. The Scottish pipes have one octave and a note below that. You blow into them, they take a whole lot of pressure. And just the coordination of the breath and the bag is very different from the Uilleann pipes. So there's trouble for pipers going from Uilleann pipes to Scottish pipes without a lot of practice. But it's something I'd be interested in getting into, you know, but just I don't have a set of Highland pipes.
Okay, fair enough. Tom Foley, tell us about some of the experiences on the road over the years. I mean, because you guys have had quite, you mentioned 17 years at the Criterion and the Cascades now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So aside from the show itself and what goes on stage, I mean, you must have had some interesting experiences through these winters. I mean, everybody knows what it's like to try to travel in the wintertime with the weather going haywire in one town or another. And in fact, I think it was last year part of you got trapped here in Ashland when the other part was in Reading or vice versa.
Well, last year was definitely one of the bad years. We had a show in Reading on the Friday, I think. And on the Saturday, we had two shows at the Criterion. So we went to Reading to do the show down there. And just when we were about to leave, it started to snow. And they closed the five. And they closed all the roads out of Reading. The only way you could go was south. And we had a plan. The only way we could get up to the Criterion was to go south. So we started going south on I-5. And the plan was to go down to, I don't remember, God knows where.
Almost to San Francisco.
Almost to San Francisco.
But then turn back up the
and
coast.
And then go west.
Cross over to the coast. And come up. That was the only thing.
9 hours
think
of a journey.
Yeah. And luckily, my son was with us, and he was fooling around on his phone. And when we were been driving south for about an hour, we found that they had opened I-5 again. So we turned around and came back. And we got back here about 5 in the morning, and we had to be at the Criterion by 11 for two shows that day. So, you know, you have to kind of deal with just... And it seems almost to get worse sometimes because the airlines want to fill every plane now. So there are fewer flights.
Right. So if your flight gets cancelled, yeah, you can't get onto the next one. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Kathleen Keane, for example, was coming from Chicago yesterday, got stuck in San Francisco. And they told her that her first flight out of San Francisco up to Medford would be December 22nd. You know,
which is a little late.
Yeah,
you think.
But luckily, we got her into Reading, so she will be in Reading for the show tomorrow night. So it's things just seem stacked in the airlines' favor all the time.
Well, we're discussing airlines here on the Jefferson Exchange, but only as part of a broader discussion with the folks from A Celtic Christmas. Tomasheen Foley is the leader of the group, and we have with us William Coulter on guitar and musical director. Patrick Darcy plays pipes and whistle, and we haven't heard much from Alice Ryan yet, the singer. We hope to shortly. Tell folks now when the next shows are so they can make sure they can get out to see you if they haven't done so already.
The show at the Cascade in Reading is tomorrow night, Friday night, mm-hmm. at 7:30, I think. Yeah, 7:30. And on Sunday, we have two shows at the Criterion in Medford. The matinee is at 3:00, and the evening show is at 7:30.
Okay, 3:00 and 7:30 on Sunday at the Criterion in Medford.
Yes.
Or the... Oh, boy. It is the Criterion, right? But it's not the Criterion Ginger Rogers anymore.
No, it's something else, and I have no idea what.
We have to learn new names all the time. Yeah. How much does the show change from night to night? I mean, is everything just locked up, what you're going to do between the stories and the songs? Or will it sometimes change because something that happened perhaps in your experiences traveling spur another memory from Ireland that leads to another story?
Oh, it definitely changes. Yeah, and even musically, we do different things. And we have a dancer, one of the most exciting and exhilarating dancers in all of Irish dance, I think, right now, a young guy from Galway called Marcus Donnelly. And honestly, we have no idea what he's going to do on any night. He does amazing things. Irish dancers usually come out as a very set form, very rigid body. You come out, you do your dance, you take a bow, and you're done. With Marcus Donnelly, he has taken it to a whole different place. That's really, to me, very, very exciting. And he involves the audience, he engages the audience, he tells a little story with his dance. He was with us the year before last. He wasn't with us last year, but I'm delighted that he's back with us this year.
You never know which side of the stage he's going to, like, fly in on a trapeze or really? Come in on a horse. Or you never know what he's going to do.
You're
right?
Joking about the horse, I sense.
Yeah, but the trapeze, you never know. Yeah,
right. I think you might just have given him a new idea.
Or a motorcycle or something.
Well, which you mentioned about involving the audience, which begs the question. I mean, this is music that really does make you want to tap your feet or get up and dance, and yet you tend to play to houses which are auditoriums with the people all facing the stage. I mean, is there any opportunity? Do you encourage people otherwise to get up and dance?
Oh, there is. A really important part of what was called the Rambling House was the dance master would challenge. Because in those days, there was no audience. You know, it was just the neighbors who came in. And the dance master would challenge the neighbors to come up and equal or maybe exceed his skills. So all the neighbors got a chance to have a go at the dance master. And we do the same thing on the stage. We invite the audience members up to come up and challenge Marcus. And places where we play regularly, they know that this is coming. And there are dancers who come prepared with their shoes, ready to challenge. And we hope there are dancers in Reading and in Medford who are going to challenge Marcus, because he does need to be brought down a peg or two.
Oh, the things we can say about the cast members who aren't here, right?
No, not here.
Right. All right, shall we do some more music?
Sure. Would you like to have a song then?
That would be great.
Okay. Want to tell them about it? Or no? Tom, you want to tell them about this song?
What song are we going to tell them about?
Bleak Midwinter.
Oh, In the Bleak Midwinter. Yeah. This is actually a song we just started doing this year. It's interesting because it was written by the poet Christina Rossetti. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how old it is, but it's several hundred years old.
Well, the melody was written by Gustav Holst.
The melody, you're right. The words were by Christina Rossetti, yeah. So are you ready, Alice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Stood high.
In the bleak midwinter, from a portion of the cast of A Celtic Christmas here on the Jefferson Exchange, with Alice Ryan singing, Patrick Darcy on pipes, or rather on whistle in this case, and William Coulter on guitar. We'll take a short break and come back and talk more with Tom Foley and our musician friends as we talk about A Celtic Christmas on the road and in the past here on the Jefferson Exchange. Back on the program in a minute 40. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are joined today by a good portion of the cast of A Celtic Christmas, making the rounds of the region and the country once again, with Tom Foley and company telling stories and songs and dances of Irish Christmases from decades past. The program will be at the Cascade Theater Friday night at 7:30, and then at the Criterion in Medford at 3 and 7:30 on Sunday. If you'd like to join our conversation here on The Exchange, join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. We just heard the cast do In the Bleak Midwinter, which has many variations, very beautiful song, which raises the question, William Coulter. I mean, there's just so much material for Christmas period, and then for Irish Christmas. There's centuries of material to draw from. How do you winnow it down to approximately a two-hour show?
Good question. Depends on the singer. We kind of like to have the singer have input to, you know, what they want to do and what they're familiar with, and then we like to generally go with the traditional Irish songs, although this year we're doing a couple of non-Irish songs, which has been new for us, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And among the choices, you not only have Irish music created in Ireland, but there's lots of American music, very heavily Irish influence from all the people who came over.
Mm-hmm.
Are you drawing from that well as well?
I'm not sure if we have, no. Which ones are you thinking of?
Like, I'm thinking of like mountain music from the Carolinas.
Oh, no, we haven't really done any Appalachian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah. You heard it here first.
Yeah, we did.
Banjo player.
Next year.
So, Tom, I mean, I ask this question every year, but when we talk about Tumpalung Lantan back in your formative years, judging by hair color alone, we're not that far apart in age. How was there no electricity and no cars in that part of the world?
It's an area of the country generally described as Slieve Lucre, and it is cut off from the rest of the country by mountains. And I think I was 13 or 14 when electricity came. But it was only probably 25 years ago that water came, for example.
Really? There was just still wells and pumps and all that stuff?
Yeah. And wells were a very important part of life, as you might imagine, in those days. And the European Community has designated this area as a unique cultural enclave because it was kind of separated from the rest of the country for so long. It developed its own style of music and even dance, the Kerry Slides, and also storytelling.
And so where is Tumpalung Lantan for the folks who might know just where the international airport is in Shannon and where Dublin is? I mean, where in relation to either of those?
It's in the southwest of the country, actually not all that far from Shannon Airport. It's probably 45 miles from Shannon Airport.
45 miles in about 6 decades of the same.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's probably 20 miles from the coast. The nearest big city, I'm trying to think of a near big city, but it's probably Limerick City is the nearest big city. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in the Irish tradition that is recounted through the telling of A Celtic Christmas, I mean, Irish, I'm sorry, my name's Riley, so I know a little bit of this stuff, but there's a certain melding of the influence of the Catholic Church and yet also more traditional pre-Christian influences in Ireland, you know, fairies and things like that. I mean, does any of that really get into the Christmas story, or is it pretty much a straight Christian telling?
It's largely a Christian telling. One of the, you don't have to scratch the surface very much in Ireland to reach that pre-Christian era. And one of the areas that I'm getting interested in is sacred springs or holy wells. And there are thousands, I would say thousands of holy wells all over the country, especially in the west of Ireland. And these simple wells, that are mostly unadorned, they are the oldest known places of continuous, unbroken veneration in the entire Western world. That people have been making pilgrimage to these wells, probably, people now think, for 3,000 years before the first Christmas. It can be traced back to 5,000 years. And one of the stories in the show that I'll be doing is about going to those wells with my grandmother when I was a small boy. And I will be describing what happened to the wells, what was the traditional form of veneration and that kind of thing.
How often do you travel back to Ireland?
At least once a year, sometimes twice a year. My family is still there on the farm. My oldest brother is on the farm with his 8 children.
Typical Irish family.
Yeah, right. So I go back as much as I can, you know.
Mm-hmm. So are you making new memories? Are those stories pretty much from your youth? Or are you swapping stories with other people as well, incorporating them into a Celtic Christmas?
I am. I for my own sake, I base everything on my childhood up to the age of 17 or 18, because to me, Christmas is about when we were young, you know. At least for me, that's what it's about. So that's what I feel most comfortable doing, you know, and thinking about and talking about.
Tell us about an Irish Christmas Eve, though, because I do love this part of it, too, the way that that the house is prepared and the way that people go to church and all that part of things.
Yeah, it was very much a religious holiday in Ireland when I was growing up. And the Christianity part of it was, you know, the heart and soul of it. And so the lighting of the candles, for example, and placing a candle in every window, that was a ritual that was done by the whole family. And the whole family would gather around for that. And the candle had to be lit by the youngest person, which, in my case, for many years happened to be me. And so when the candle lit and the light came out into the room, everybody in the family would say, they would open their hands and say, "Go marry me, Bioig and Amsho Rish," which meant, "May we all live till this time next year." And my grandmother always used to say that the lights in the windows of all the houses along the valley and up along the hillside, that created an aisle of candlelight for the Holy Family as they passed through the parish. And people would leave the front doors of the house slightly ajar all through Christmas night, so that the Holy Family could come in if they wanted to. And they would find the table set for them and the best of food all laid out, ready and waiting. So the tradition was very much alive that the Holy Family were present that night. And even if they didn't come in, and they very often did not, you would find...
very often.
People would leave a bucket of spring water from these wells that I'm telling you about. They would leave that bucket of water outside the ajar door. And that water was considered to have great curative powers. It was used for all kinds of ailments in the coming year.
So if the Holy Family didn't show up, when did you get to eat the food?
We got to eat the food the next day, which was Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you would be kind of glad that they hadn't shown up.
Right. Interesting comparison, though. Instead of waiting for Santa Claus or Father Christmas to arrive, we're talking about the arrival of the Holy Family itself.
Yeah, and Santa Claus was a part of it, but a very small part of it. And gift-giving was a very small part of it. And the gift you gave almost always was something that you had made yourself, you know. There was very little cash in the community because it was essentially a barter community.
I'll do for you, you do for me.
Exactly.
You know, eggs for a tire, that sort of thing.
Exactly, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's. Why don't we hear some more music? What should we do next, William?
Just another Irish reel, perhaps?
Yeah. Over the Moor to Maggie, which is a tune I heard from the playing of Willie Clancy, who was a great piper from County Clare in the west of Ireland.
All right, William Coulter and Patrick Darcy. Right. More music from the cast of A Celtic Christmas. Patrick Darcy on the Uilleann pipes and William Coulter on guitar. He's also the musical director of the show. Program again Friday on the at the Cascade Theatre in Reading at 7:30 and Sunday at the Criterion in Medford at 3 and 7:30. How much longer do you think Celtic Christmas will go? Is it something you can see yourself doing for years and years and years, Tom Foley?
I don't see it going past another 20 or 30 years.
And what would be the limiting factors? But you're still having fun, that is clear.
Yeah, and you know, oddly, the older I get, the rarer people are who have had this experience that I have had, and therefore the more interesting it gets to some people anyway.
Since you do get people who have lived in Ireland more recently than you, are their stories sometimes wildly different? I mean, are you from Dublin, did you say, Pat?
From Dublin, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, my parents would have gone through a similar upbringing. You know, my mum's from near Mulranny in Mayo in the west of Ireland. And it was funny when you were talking about the Holy Wells there. There's a beautiful little Holy Well there in the graveyard, Killeen Graveyard, near the foot of Crowpatrick, you know, mm-hmm. St. Patrick's Well. So we used to go to that and... But they had similar, you know, no electricity, no running water, that type of thing.
But was a Christmas for somebody from your generation growing up in Greater Dublin pretty much like an American Christmas now?
Exactly the same. It was like Home Alone.
Even then, you know, even when I was growing up, a Christmas in Dublin, for example, our Christmas would have been as foreign to a Dubliner as it would have been to a New Yorker, you know.
Mm-hmm. So that region off to the southwest was kind of like the land that time forgot.
It kind of was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really was.
But a better life for it, it sounds like, and certainly a better set of stories for it.
In some ways, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. life for a lot of people was hard. You know, it was there were small farmers. There was very little cash. The conversation was it was a communal way of life, and maybe a communal way of life is how we as humans were meant to live, you know. So you had that basic thing of that communal living that, because there was a saying in Irish, translated means it's only in the shelter of our neighbours that any of us can live. And that was a very important part of life. You were really dependent on your neighbours in a way that you're not anymore, because your neighbours were, there was no social security or health insurance or life insurance or property insurance. Your neighbours were all those things, and So you were dependent on your neighbors in a way that you're not.
And has that changed even now in Tampalang Gontan?
It has changed. Yeah, I think with the advent of television, really changed things. But there's still more of a communal way of life there than there is in many places. But it's a pale shadow, indeed, of what it was then, you know. It would have to be.
Shall we fill the last 2 minutes with song? Got something else left in the way of a
reel? Yeah.
Okay, let's. Let me remind you again. Celtic Christmas at the Cascade Theater, Friday at 7:30, Sunday 3 and 7:30 at the Criterion in Medford. Tom Foley, Alice Ryan, William Coulter, Patrick Darcy. Thank you all for joining us, and Thank you, Pat and William will take us out.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We've got a song here that talks about a lot of these Christmas traditions that Tom has mentioned, called the Kerry Christmas Carol.
The floor and clean the hearth and set the fire to keep, for they might visit us tonight when all the world's asleep. Don't blow the tall white candle out, but leave it burning bright, so that they'll know they're welcome here this holy Christmas. Sweet milk for the child, and they will bless the fire that baked and to the hands that toiled, for Joseph will be